it's not that other person, it's you. How are you communicating with them? How are you interacting with them that's getting them to respond and behave in the way that they are? Because in general, we are typically reactionary. Even though we're full of intention and everything else, we're human beings. And as humans, we respond and react to things just automatically. And in so doing, it really is the truth when you hear experts say, we teach people how to treat us. Well, we teach people how to respond and how to relate with us and how to communicate with us as well. So I come from the premise of all 100% personal responsibility in your relationships and what are the dynamics you're creating through that other person, because there are specific reasons why we all behave the way we do. And it is motive driven. It's not environment or lifestyle or even learned behavior, although all of that does come into play. But our initial reaction and response is motive driven.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's that time of week again, and it's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you also enjoyed our most recent interviews with Rita Sloris of OmniSend and also with Glenn Fisher of All Good Copy. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Twyla Kay, a self-awareness, relationship and communication expert who helps employees become effective, high-performing team members, while at the same time giving them and their leaders the necessary tools and resources to increase engagement, to improve communication, to have much greater energy and enthusiasm, improve collaboration, creativity, and profitability. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. Go check it out. It's free to join, and if you're a member already, just log in to get your resources. If you're not a member, just click on the Take a Peek Inside button and see if it's for you. In our discussion today, Twyla talked to me about self-awareness and understanding the why behind our behavior. She told us about knowing who you are and why you do what you do, and more importantly, why you don't do what you don't do and why that is important. And she told me about transforming teams with an understanding of personality science. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Twyla Kay. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Austin, Texas in the USA, Twyla Kay, who's a self-awareness, relationship and communication expert. She's a speaker and a coach. So welcome to the podcast, Twyla. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Jan Lunga, who was my guest on episode 166 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you, Twyla. So a big hello to Jan.
Thank you. Yes, a big hello and a big shout out of gratitude to Jan, for sure.
Now, you help CEOs, business owners, and company leaders build alignment in culture and cohesion in teams. You talk about putting human back into human resources, which I wholeheartedly applaud. I'm sort of all about putting human back into marketing, so that's a very consistent message. And I know that you also work with family-run businesses with their family relationships that clearly transgress the business and personal boundaries. So I'm really looking forward to delving into all those things, relationship, business culture, and alignment with you today. But before we start talking about all those things, give us a bit of a high-level snapshot of your background. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I have been, I always say if there's one thing that I've always known my entire life, it's people. I've always had the innate ability to understand people at a very deep level, particularly why they do the things they do. I've never necessarily looked at behavior as something they're doing, but something of why, what's happening behind the scenes. And my career took me in many paths. I started my first business when I was 9 years old and then became a professional singer, entertainer at 13 on and off the Las Vegas Strip, and traveled all over the country and opened stages for many great country music legends that we know today, and spent about 23 years in real estate as my day job while I was supporting myself through my entertainment career. And started a business again in 2007, one of three gift basket and corporate gift businesses, and scaled that very successfully into becoming one of the largest manufacturers and dropship wholesalers in the nation for specialty gift baskets. Sold that business in 2013 and decided to become a coach full time, because at that time all of my clients were coming to me. And in all of my work in growing businesses and helping the companies that I worked for and also the companies that I worked with as a coach, it was never really about sales or marketing or processes or any of that. It was about the people and their performance within their roles and their responsibilities and how they were doing things and how they weren't, why they were doing certain things, why they weren't doing certain things. And it just became a life study of mine and has evolved into this wonderful career of helping CEOs and business owners to really hone in on their people and their performance.
Mm, that's an interesting journey through music as well as business background and a very early start there. I'm curious, how did you first kind of realize that you had this knowledge and this knack to understand people and their behavior?
I was asked this question not too long ago, and I remembered a scene when I was about 6 years old. My parents had owned a local convenience store, a local 7-Eleven convenience store in our town. And I remember hearing them argue one night about the business. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, if I could just get in their room and tell mom that if she would just listen to dad and respond to him in a certain way, then he would listen and respond to her in a different way that she would need. And it was just an innate sense that I've had my entire life, and could be able to sit back and observe people and how they're interacting with one another and how they're interacting with themselves and the world around them, and be able to identify where they're missing opportunities into being able to better communicate with one another, to be better at relating to one another. And that was my earliest memory of being able to do it. It's just been a gift that I was given, and didn't realize until later in my life that was my job on this earth, was to help people communicate and relate better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I was going to move on to the question, what do you do and why do you do it? But you've captured that in five words, I think it is, which is really beautiful, helping people to communicate and relate better. So
thank you.
So how do you kind of tackle that? Or let's step back one step. What kind of typical problems do people come to you with?
The typical problems that they come to me with are, you know, things behavioral, things that someone is doing or not doing that they should be that they feel they should be doing, that if they were doing, things would be better, or the business would run better, or they would get better results. And I always take that back down with them. It's not that other person, it's you. How are you communicating with them? How are you interacting with them that's getting them to respond and behave in the way that they are? Because in general, we are typically reactionary. Even though we're full of intention and everything else, we're human beings. And as humans, we respond and react to things just automatically. And in so doing, it really is the truth when you hear experts say, we teach people how to treat us. Yeah. Well, we teach people how to respond and how to relate with us and how to communicate with us as well. So I come from the premise of all 100% personal responsibility in your relationships, and what are the dynamics you're creating through that other person, because there are specific reasons why we all behave the way we do. And it is motive driven. It's not environment or lifestyle or even learned behavior, although all of that does come into play. But our initial reaction and response is motive driven. And I've done that study and the science that's behind that to be able to recognize why people are behaving the way they are, not just how they're behaving and how they typically do depending on their personality, but why.
Hmm. Yeah, I love the concept of taking responsibility for your own communication, because that's, if there's something you want to change and there's something you don't like about another person's behavior, well, the one thing that you can actually influence is your own communication and your own style. You can't easily, well, you can, but it's much harder to influence the other person's behavior directly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are who we are, and no one can change us. And no situation really changes the core of who we are. But depending on how someone is interacting with us is the different side of us that they will see.
Mm. So in terms of an organization that has issues like this, let's say Joe's not doing his job properly. Every time I ask him to do X, he does Y. Do you tackle it at that level, or is that where you get into the issue of culture and beliefs and attitudes and kind of chunk it up to a bigger picture? Because if Joe understands the bigger picture, maybe he would be doing X when I ask for X.
Yes, I do both. What I start with is always an assessment of each individual within the organization. And I have an assessment tool that identifies their human core motive, which is the why behind all of the what they do. Mm-hmm. And once we have that kind of awareness and enlightenment, we begin to even change ourselves and truly understand. And I've had a lot of clients and a lot of friends and family that I've passed this tool on to that have come back and just have been mind blown by the revelations of, wow, I always knew that I did this, but I never knew why. I didn't understand why until now. And when we understand the why behind something, we can better identify when it happens or when we're doing that and change it.
Hmm. So,
and make the changes. But when we don't have the awareness of why, then we just keep repeating the same patterns over and over again. So I start with that and then take to the big picture of how that actually fits into the dynamic of the entire team and culture and what that creates within the team and culture and what changes need to be made to change that dynamic.
That's fascinating. So you work on, so is it right to say it's self-awareness that you work on, and that when people become a lot more self-aware of their motivations and perhaps underlying beliefs and behaviors that are driving how they're behaving in a particular situation, that kind of already is starting to make a change.
Absolutely, because that awareness in itself, then you can no longer ignore what you're doing. You can't. It's humanly impossible to ignore it after that point. And it doesn't mean that that same behavior won't repeat itself, but when it does, you'll know it and you'll begin to change it. And over time, it does become different. And sometimes in a lot of cases, it's become different literally overnight because the awareness in itself makes you sit back and say, boy, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, what I found in those situations where you become more aware of something that you're doing more or less unconsciously is that then you can it gives you more choice. You basically can choose to do that if it's the right approach, or you can say, well, no, I'm not going to default to what I normally do because in this case it's not the best approach. It's not going to serve me or the others that well. So.
Yes. And when you have that understanding of yourself and then the other people that you're interacting with on a daily basis, and you understand where they're coming from and why they do the things that they do, then all of a sudden it becomes very clear on the best way to interact with one another. And it can literally change and has changed the entire culture and cohesion of teams within minutes.
Yeah, very rapid change. That's amazing.
Yes, so, very rapid change and long lasting, because this isn't something that now that you know this, you can't ignore it. You cannot say, I don't know.
So tell us a little bit more about the tool that you mentioned, that how you assess people's behaviors and motivations.
The actual tool that I use is called the color code assessment, and it's revolutionary in the field of personality science and personality assessment from the standpoint that most of the tools out there and most of the assessments out there, the most popular, let's say DISC and Myers-Briggs and StrengthsFinders and those personality assessment tools, they are all fabulous and all fantastic and do their own job. And I have worked and facilitated many other personality assessments and tools throughout my entire career. But I found the color code to be revolutionary in the fact that it is the only one that I have found to date. And when I share it with other people, they in turn say the same thing, that actually gives you the why. And many others will say, we'll have that marketing tagline, it's why you do the things you do. But as you read them, they're still describing what. And most of them are based on who you are today, who you've become, which is more learned behavior than innate. And the color code is based in innate questions and innate personality science. And so there's no wrong answers. There's no, it's all childhood related instead of today related. So you get a real sense of who that person is. And then the results that it gives you tells you why, not just the what, but it actually goes much deeper than any other assessment tool that I've ever worked with or found on the market today. And it does actually reveal why.
That's fascinating. Well, I always wonder about some of those tools. Particularly Myers-Briggs is one which tends to categorize people and pigeonhole them in a way that, so this is you. So I typically come out at INTJ, and then every time I've done this test, the people who've applied it say, well, this is how you're going to behave. So basically that's your behavior. And I say, well, yeah, maybe that's my default behavior, but it's not always, because sometimes I choose to behave differently. Sometimes I choose to get on stage and be outgoing and do a presentation. Well, that's not an introvert behavior, although introverts do get up on stage and present. So it's kind of the idea of pigeonholing and then saying, well, this is how you behave, kind of almost for some people might even be, what's the right word, might even kind of influence the way they behave. So I've got to be this because that's what I'm pigeonholed as opposed to just knowing more about yourself and saying, well, I want to get up on stage and I'm an introvert, so how do I have to be to get up on stage and overcome that hesitation that I might have because I'm an introvert, just as an example.
Yes, absolutely. And that is the core difference between the color code and any other personality assessment tool that I've ever come in contact with or know about. And I do a lot of study about them. And you're absolutely right. Assessment tools like Myers-Briggs, again, fabulous in their own right, they do categorize you. And color code does label you with a color, but only from the standpoint that it's easier for us to remember, that behavior is typical of a red, or that behavior is typical of a yellow or a white or a blue. Those are the four main colors. But it's only to label the core driving motive. And the color code is all motive based, and then core needs and wants of that actual motive. So let's say we're talking about a red whose driving core motive is power, and power not in the sense of control or authority, but power in the sense of being able to get from point A to point B in the most productive, effective manner possible. And they are your type A's, right? They have an objection in their view, and boy, you'd better either get out of their way or be on the train with them, because they're going to get it.
Yeah.
And they're going to get it right now. And if you are in their way, they don't want to step over you or step on you or bulldoze you or anything else. That is not ever their intent nor their want. Their want is strictly to achieve that objective. But if you're in the way, sorry, you're collateral damage. You're in my way. Right? And so there are going to be behaviors that go along with that are pretty typical and pretty common within that core driving motive. And there are certain hierarchy of needs that are more priority to that certain personality than someone like myself, who is yellow and motivated by fun. Fun is my core driving motive. And that doesn't mean fun just in frivolity and let's go party, although any time on the beach is a fun day for me. Yeah. But it means freedom, the freedom and the autonomy to be, do, and have what I want. And so there are certain behaviors and certain patterns that come with that motive versus someone who is driven by power.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things that kind of raises for me a couple of questions. I guess the first one, and maybe this is more of a comment around entrepreneurs, might be a little bit more in that yellow space because of that core need for freedom, if you like, freedom and choice in terms of doing their own thing. And the other one that is a question is around, I mean, it sounds to me like the yellow and the red might not get on too well if the power person is, okay, we're going this way and just, get on the bus or get out of the way. And the yellow person might say, well, there's another way to do it. So, and it's not going to be fun if they get run over.
Yes, and that's true. Reds and yellows, the power and the fun, they do get along very well until that contention comes.
Yeah.
And because they are two very strong personalities, and the power person is, they're very logic based, very pragmatic. And the fun people are very creative and innovative. And so that clashes in that particular situation, right? We're great friends, but don't put us both in powerful roles in the same company because we're going to butt heads all the time. And they're going to want it their way. And, you know, I always say that the Reds are come my way or hell or the highway, it's going to get done, and it's going to get done this way. And the Yellow's like, well, wait a minute, where there's a will, there's a way. So let's just take the afternoon and let's go to lunch and figure this out. And that doesn't always work. So those two personality styles have a certain dynamic between them that quite honestly takes a leader who can sit back and say, okay, here are my two strongest personalities and my two strongest people on my team. And how am I going to bring them together? And how am I going to get the Yellow on board so that the Red can get to point B very quickly without running the Yellow over and making them feel bad? Because one of the things, and I find this, I typically hang out with Reds. Because I love that drivenness about them. I'm very driven myself. So that's very sexy to me. And I just love that, that power personality. But I have been lax in being on certain projects or being on certain tasks with a Red, and they have trampled over me, and boy, it hurts. I don't like it. At all. Yeah. So then I start questioning, were they really my friend to begin with? And, you know, then I have to remember, no, they weren't. This is a business setting. You're not friends. Business is business.
How does understanding, you know, which color you fit into and what the personality traits and behavioral traits and beliefs are behind that, how does that then help that person become more aware of the other colors, personalities, if you like, and adapt their behavior in the situation that's going to benefit everyone?
Well, that simple knowledge of understanding yourself and the people around you helps in that way, just as I was describing with my friends that I hang out with that are Reds and me being Yellow. When they get into that power mode, and they do trample over me if I'm in the way, I don't take it personally anymore, because now I understand that they're not trying to hurt me. They don't want to hurt me. That's not their intention nor their goal. Their intention and goal is to meet their vision and to achieve whatever result or whatever objective they're going for. And if I'm in the way of that, oh, well, I got to take the punches. And so just understanding that about that other person, it takes false assumptions away. It removes that taking things personally and really being able to understand one another. And when you're in relationships, especially in a family business, that is so, so important to really understand the other people, because you have an understanding of them growing up with them and being their family member. And so you have the understanding of their outward behaviors, but you may not have this understanding of why they do those things. And once you do, then all of those false assumptions and narratives that you've had your entire life about one another dissipate.
Yeah. So you don't attribute meaning to their behavior that is about you. It's more about how they operate.
Correct. Correct. And as a leader, to understand that about the people that you're leading is just an incredible benefit for you.
Now, you touched on personal relationships a couple of times and mentioned that in your interactions, in those clashes, you don't take it personally because it's just business. So when it is a personal relationship, family member, partner that you're in business with, how does that add a layer of complexity? I mean, what are the things that make that a little bit more complex?
Well, it does make it more complex because now you're working and playing together, especially if you're married to your business partner, it becomes very complex. But again, when you truly understand yourself and your partner, and your partner understands themselves and you in this deeper way, where you truly now know why you do the things, acceptance, tolerance, all of that becomes greater in your relationship. And it doesn't mean that there's not going to be conflict, because we're human. We will always have conflict. But it will allow you the ability to use conflict as a positive force instead of a negative driver. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and conflict, I mean, conflict can be good if it's around, I was thinking of your story before about the red and the yellow approach, and if the conflict leads to lots of additional alternatives to get from A to B, and then consideration of those many alternatives, a robust debate around the merits of each one, could very well lead to a much better outcome. But of course, where you're working with somebody that you're in a personal relationship as well, that conflict has the potential to spill over into that personal space, into the fun space.
Absolutely. And it allows you the ability to make different choices. Now, when I come into a situation, I have a family member who, my sister, is a blue, and they are driven by intimacy, which actually means deep-rooted connection. And so trust, honesty, integrity, loyalty, all of those things come into play. And their motto is just do the right thing. If you do the right thing, you never have to worry about doing it over. Well, a yellow is never concerned about doing the right thing. They're just concerned about doing it. Let's just wing it. We're going to try this and see if it works. And my sister sits back and goes, "What are you doing?" And I used to take that very personally, and it caused a lot of self-esteem devaluation with me, right? Because I always felt like, boy, in my sister's eyes, I can never do anything right. And she's my older sister. So of course, you want to aspire as a younger sibling to always have your older siblings look up to you as well, as much as you look up to them. And, you know, I used to beat myself up and think, boy, I'll just never be able to do anything right. And I'll never be able to do anything that my sister is proud of. And now that I understand who she is versus who I am, I don't even care if I measure up anymore, because I know that with a blue, you never will. They hold themselves in the world to a standard that most of us can't even comprehend. And so now I just think, okay, it's her being her. And I'm good with that, and I'm not going to let it affect me anymore. And with my power yielding friends, the reds that I work with, if I know I'm in my way, now I use that as motivation to get myself into gear. And because it's no longer being taken personally that, boy, they just don't think I have what it takes, or, you know, I can't seem to get with it enough to make this happen. One more time, they're going to achieve success that I want and I won't. Now it's motivation for me to say, oops, I'm not doing what I need to be doing. So let's get it into gear. If I want to make this happen, I need to make it happen. Hmm.
Yeah, well, that raises a really important point, and you've alluded to it there in terms of the self-awareness part, in terms of being really confident in your own self-worth and making other people's behaviors not be about a judgment of your self-worth.
Yes, absolutely. But rather just an indication of them and how you can better relate to get better outcomes and a better relationship with them. Mm.
And at the same time, I like what you said very early on in the interview about taking the responsibility of your own communications and your own behavior in any given situation that could influence the outcome, because that's what you can do. And a lot of people, I think, still have this thing of, you know, so-and-so's not doing the right thing, and so they worry more about the other person's behavior or the other person's thoughts or way of being or what they've said about them than about their own behavior and how they can influence the situation.
Yes, yes. And if we watch children and we listen to them, we can see this happening, right? You see children and you hear them, and I've said it as a child, you know, she made me do this, or, you know, they made me. And as a parent or an adult around them, you think, oh, come on, nobody makes you do anything, you know? And I had a penny for every time my parents would say, well, if someone, you know, told you to jump off a cliff, would you do it? Mm. I'd be a very rich woman if I had a penny for every time I heard that from them. But if you look at that and what they're really saying is the way that they're interacting with me is causing this effect of my behavior.
Hmm. Although in some ways, yeah, at an unconscious level, I'm just thinking, you know, I've heard people say that, adults, not children. Mm-hmm. At an unconscious level, I'm thinking, well, you're actually abdicating responsibility for your behavior.
Yes.
So, yes. So that's kind of the counter argument in a way to what we were talking about a few moments ago about influencing your own behavior, which can then have an impact on any situation because you have control over your own behavior.
Yes, you do. Hmm. And once you understand what motivates and what brings on your behavior, then you can make different choices. And you can see, once you have that awareness and that understanding of yourself and the others around you, then whatever they do no longer has that same effect on you.
Hmm.
And you do make different choices in how you respond and behave. As I was saying with my sister and I before, you know, I used to take things personally, and then I would lash out at her and I would say mean things to her. Because when a yellow feels demeaned and cornered, that's what we do. The hair stands up on the back of our neck, and boy, we get really nasty with our tongue. And you know, I never understood that. And when I would say something to her, then she would say, why did you say that to me? Well, you made me, you know, and there's a truth to that when you're unaware.
Yeah.
When you are unaware, there is a truth to that. But once you become aware, and once you understand yourself and the others around you, then you can no longer say that, and you can begin to make different choices, and you do naturally because now you have this awareness that you never had before. And that's what the color code gives you, is that awareness.
Mm, that's great. So we've talked quite a bit about individual personality traits and behavior. How do you weave that together then to build sort of team cultures? And I'm also, well, I'll get onto that question later. So how do you pull that together and to build team cultures?
By bringing everyone together and really giving them the awareness of who the other people are on the team and why they do the things. And that's when we start getting into understanding the people around you. First, we work on understanding yourself and mm-hmm. then take it into that team model and really bring the team together and have them understand one another. And I have had people on teams who haven't spoken a word other than what they absolutely needed to get a project done, outside, who now spend time with each other and each other's families and everything else, because now they have this understanding mm-hmm. of who each other are, and a friendship blossoms from it.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
It is. It is transformed teams and transformed how they work, together and then how they later play together as well.
Hmm. So the other question that I was going to follow up with is around remote teams. So there's a lot of businesses these days working across geographical boundaries and across different cultures, and teams or individuals that are in different locations and don't often actually physically meet in one place. So how does that complicate this whole dynamic?
You know, it only complicates it in the way that they're not together all the time. And so you don't get the body language and things that you would if you're in front of someone face-to-face or meeting with them on a daily basis. But the companies that I work with, a lot of them do have remote workers. And so we get on Zoom or Skype or any other, mostly Zoom, because you can hold great group meetings in Zoom, and we talk about it. And we talk about, okay, well, this person's a red. So, you know, Bob, explain to people when this situation happens, you know, what's your first response? What is your first? And then once they start telling their coworkers really how different situations and how different approaches are affecting them, then everyone on the team is kind of like, oh, now we get it. Okay. So now we get it when we call Bob and he's like, what do you need? And doesn't say, hi, how are you? How are you doing today? You know, but he answers phone and goes, what do you need? It's really because he's in the middle of a project. We have interrupted him, but we're important enough for him to take our call. And he just doesn't have the filter nor the awareness, you know, really that power person is not going to make small talk. They're just not. They're not about that. And so once you understand that as a teammate, now Bob picks up the phone and goes, what do you need? You go right into it. And again, there's no false assumption of, geez, he's really being a jerk. And, yeah. You know, all of those things that happen behind the scenes that deteriorate the team because people are making false assumptions about one another.
Hmm. All right. Well, Twyla, this is really fascinating. I could go on and talk for ages about this whole aspect of personal relationships and behavioral styles and how that impacts on teams and so on. But I am aware of the time, so I think it's a good place to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions and hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers. Not that we haven't already got a lot of really great insights from you today, but some really short, insightful answers that will inspire people to go out and do something awesome today.
You bet.
So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think the number one thing that they need to do is get out of their own way, really, and get out of their head. We all have the ability, no matter what personality or no matter what type of person we are, we have the ability to be creative and innovative and visionary. It's just, do we live in that fear base or that critical base of, you know, oh, I can't, oh, that's not going to be good enough, or, oh, that's not going to be right, so I'm not going to say anything yet, or I'm not going to put this idea out there yet because I haven't perfected it, and, you know, all of those things that we do to hold ourselves back, right? So I think the number one thing we can do is get out of our way.
Mm. Yeah, that's wonderful advice, and I like that you pointed out that everyone has the ability to be innovative and come up with ideas, and I think if people take the approach that I've actually got the responsibility to come up with ideas and share those in terms of making a contribution to this team or whatever initiative we're currently working on, then it might help get them to get out of their own way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we should approach that with just about everything. It's my responsibility. You know, I talk about that with my entrepreneurial clients as well. It's your responsibility to start this business and help people solve this problem that you're solving.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas and new products?
I think the best thing that I've done to do that is just to really take time by myself and just let my thoughts free flow. And I have one wall in my home office that is nothing but blank white sheets, the sticky back sheets. And every day I am just writing down ideas. And it doesn't mean that any of them get acted on. And it doesn't necessarily mean that all of them are even for me. I have dug through past sheets in my pile and gone back and said, oh my goodness, I had this idea 5 years ago, and this was actually for Carol, not for me. And so I think the best thing that you can do is just give yourself the permission and the time to just think. And to stand in front of a board or a piece of paper or your computer screen, whatever it is, and just write down any idea. Non-judge the idea. Don't even judge it. Just write it down, because you never know who it's for or where you're going to need it.
Yeah, I love the write without judgment part. And you've reminded me, because I've got a whole wall of whiteboards here, and I photograph them and then clean them off so that I can keep writing. You've reminded me that I need to go and revisit some old photographs of the whiteboards and just keep taking a look at those ideas that are parked there somewhere.
Yes, because there is iteration in every one that you do. And every time that you allow yourself to do that, there's an iteration of ideas there.
Yeah. All right. So what's a resource you use most often? It might be your whiteboard.
The resource that I use most often is paper and pen. For me, there's something about a pen or a marker actually touching a paper versus my fingers touching a keyboard.
Yeah.
And so for me, that personally, that is the greatest tool. I find that that is when I can be my most creative, my most innovative, and my most non-judgmental of myself. There's just something about that paper and pen to me.
Yeah, I find the same. I mean, I'm a digital junkie. I'm trying to digitize as much as I can, but I agree with you. There's something about writing physically with on a whiteboard or paper on pen that somehow is just different, and there's a lot less constraints around it.
So, yes. Yes. And there are some digital mind map tools out there that are great, you know, that are subscription based, or you can get them for free, and those work well for digital junkies. But even for my digital junkie clients, I always propose pen and paper because there's just something that magical that happens in creativity and innovation with a pen and paper.
All right. Great advice. So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Measurement, for sure. I start every project or every client that I'm helping them grow their business, whatever I'm doing with them, we always start, I call it mind the gap. I've visited Great Britain, and I love the mind the gap. And they do it for the underground metro there, that you don't catch your foot and get caught by the train. But, you know, for me, it's very signatory of, you have to understand where you are in the very beginning and be very honest and truthful about where you are, and then look at where you want to be and what are you going to have to do, or what things are going to need to be in place or take place to get you from where you are to where you want to be. And then every month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever is suitable for that project or that client, then we're tracking and we're measuring. You know, we put in, okay, how, if we need to get, if we're at point A and we need to get to point B, how do we need to get there? And what are we going to need to track to know that we're on target, that we're meeting that objective and that it's actually getting achieved. And if you do all of that in the beginning, and set your measurements, your key metrics up so that you know that you're either hitting it or not and what you need to do, then I find keeping on track is very easy.
Hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love the mind the gap analogy. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have that on some of our tracks here as well. All right, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Know your story. You know, that's one of the things that transformed my ability to be able to differentiate myself, is to truly understand my gifts. And I'm not talking just my skills or my strengths or my talents. I'm talking my real gifts, those natural born gifts that you know you were given, that no one else was given. And how that, and to see, to be able to go back through my life history and see how that's been the golden thread, as we talked about from the very beginning. I've had this innate gift given to me of being able to understand people and being able to observe them and know exactly what they're doing and why. And later it became a study, and it became a more honed skill and honed craft and a business model for me. But it started as a gift. And when I looked at my entire life and saw how that gift was a golden thread through everything that I've ever done in my life, and when I talk about it in that way, then people respond in a different way. They're like, wow. You know, I just had one of the top 25 influencers, marketing influencers in the world, Brian Kramer, tell me just very recently, when we were talking about personality science and my gift in it, he said, you know, Twyla, you are the best kept secret. And I thought, first of all, it's a compliment coming from someone of his caliber. But two, it told me, okay, I've nailed it. I've been able to tell people how I'm different and differentiate myself. So you've got to understand those natural born gifts and how they've been threaded through your entire life, and be able to communicate that story to people so that they know how different you really are.
Mm. Yeah, wonderful advice and great example too. All right. So thanks, Twyla. This has been really great. Where can people reach out and learn more about you and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Miriam, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you and being on the show. And as we talked about in the beginning, I've had a website crash. We are diligently working on that and trying to get that back up. Normally, you can reach me through my website at twylak.com, and that's K-A-Y-E.com. But in the meantime, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Twyla K. It's T-W-I-L-A-K-A-Y-E. And those are really the two best social media platforms to reach out, and you'll get me. You won't get a VA or an assistant. You will get me.
Mm. All right. Well,
it's human to human.
Yeah. And we'll have links to that in the, all of those in the show notes associated with this episode, so people can click straight through.
Thank you.
So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation in their field and wants to really develop high-powered teams?
Know who you are, why you do the things you do, and more importantly, why you don't do what you don't do. Because as a leader, it's never in what you will do, it's always in what you won't do, that there's going to be some problems for you. So that is my number one advice to anyone, whether it's a leader or someone going into a relationship or anything. Know who you are and understand why you do the things you do, and more importantly, why you don't do what you don't do.
Hmm. Yeah, great advice. All right. Well, finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
You know, I would love for you to, I am in communication all the time and hoping to be working with very soon with the team at Lately. Anyone on the team, Lauren, Kate Bradley-Chernis, I can connect her with you. I would love to see one of them come on your podcast. One, they're just an amazing tech startup company, but they're changing marketing in a way that none of us can even comprehend. And the AI that they have that are powering their software, their subscription-based software, is just amazing. As a marketer, you know, most of our job is creating content, right? And how do we create these thousands of pieces of content? How do we create all these Twitter posts and LinkedIn posts and Facebook posts and Instagram posts and this and that and blogs and all of these things and podcasts and all of these things? And how do we ever stay up on top of that? And Lately has taken a six-day marketing job into a six-minute marketing job with their auto-generation technology. And I would love to see you bring one of them on the show, because the technology itself, the innovation that is within that team and that company and that software development is just mind-blowing.
Mm, sounds absolutely fascinating. Well, we'll see if we can get an introduction to the team at Lately from you and get them on the podcast.
Yes, I would love to facilitate that.
Thanks a lot. And thanks so much for sharing your time so generously with us today and your insights, Twyla. I've really enjoyed this. It's been a fascinating discussion about relationships, about personality science, and about understanding ourselves and our own behavior and how we can make change by actually changing our own behavior. So I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you. We sure will.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jürgen.
I hope you enjoyed that engaging and insightful conversation with Twyla, and like me, learned from what she shared with us. I love Twyla's emphasis on taking personal responsibility, that change begins with ourselves and what we can control. Being more self-aware and changing the meaning and response to others' behaviour. I'm curious to find out what you took away from Twyla's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/TwylaK. That is TwylaKaye, or lowercase, or one word, innovabiz.co/TwylaK. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Twyla there, as well as links to her website and the other resources we spoke about in the conversation. Twyla suggested we interview one of the folks from Lately, an AI tool to turn your content into social media posts on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Team Lately, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Twyla K. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Also, check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show at talesofmarketingtransformation.com, where each episode will provide one valuable message to guide you on your journey of marketing transformation. Tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Les Watson from Get More Time and Zach Marino and Rockwell Felder of Squadcast. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. all you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.